I'm Theo.
And I'm Juliet.
And this is Apologies Accepted.
We offer an entertaining look at some of the big issues in history by examining public apologies of the famous and infamous.
We're looking at politicians, serial killers, actors, and you.
Send us a public apology you'd like to make, and we'll read it on the air and give you a chance to redeem yourself or just get some guilt off your shoulders.
We're here for you. Once a week, maybe more if you're really, really sorry.
Apologies Accepted.
The podcast.
And my bacon for this week is that it's almost Theo's birthday. Happy birthday, Theo.
Oh, gosh. I was like, she went off script. What's happening?
But what's shaking bacon for you?
Well, it is my pre-birthday, which I've been celebrating for the last 2 weeks.
Month.
Yes. So, yay. Hooray for that. And I'm getting ready to drive back to Austin today, which is great. And also, awesome. Will take a long time. Let's see. I've been to every antique thrift store and consignment store several times over. I bought an arm, not a real one, but off of a statue. And
you did?
I did. And they wanted a lot of money for it. Okay. So here's how I got tricked into buying an arm. And it's not my fault. So I found the arm. And I was like, oh, that looks so cool. And I could see it on every coffee table I will ever own in the future. So maybe I should buy it. Oh, wow. Look at that price. So I walked out and then I went on eBay and I went on the internet.
Looking at arms and statues
that have lost arms, but the arms there, the statue's gone. And there weren't any that were as cool. But also in my head, I know that this was a design element or thing, right? For a couple of years. Now, am I wrong? And maybe it was the 90s? Okay, maybe. But even especially if it was the 90s, there should be arms all over Goodwill.
Everywhere.
Right? Yeah. And there just aren't. So anyway, I was visiting the arm. I saw it like three or four different times.
Uh-huh.
And the guy who owns the shop was in the shop, right? Uh-huh. Nice shop, busy, but nice shop. And the guy was like, oh, can I help you? And I just started talking, right? Usually I say no, but I was like, well, I'm curious about this arm and I really like it and la, 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 la. And I had gone into another antique store, a big antique mall, right? And it was crammed full of crap. And as I was walking out, the guy had asked me, oh, can I help you? And I was like, well, I'm looking for an arm. And he looked at me like I had said, I'm actually looking for a real life human arm, right? And he said, no, I don't have anything like that, but I've got a hand making a peace sign. And I was like, no, 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 thanks.
No,
so just after that experience, I'd walked into the antique store that had the arm and the owner stopped me and he's like, can I help you? And I was like, oh, this arm and blah, and I've been looking everywhere for it and I really like it. And he was like, well, is there anything that I could do? I can offer you a discount. How would you like? And then he pulled out a calculator and he shaved 10% off of the price, right?
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, sold. Done. Great. Only took 10%. That was it. That and the guy said during the middle of my rambling about the arm, because I knew I was going to buy it, right? Uh-huh. And I didn't want to, but I knew I was. The arm was forcing me to buy it. And so in the middle of all that, while I was saying out loud, like, I have no use for an arm. It's just another thing to dust. What am I going to do with this hand, right? He said, well, you know, it's not useless. It's a piece of art. And then I was like, I have to buy it. If I don't buy it, it looks like I hate art. And so I own this hand and a hammed arm thing. And I'm very excited about it.
Like from the shoulder to the hand?
No, don't be greedy. It's just from the elbow to the tips of the finger. And so it's incredibly detailed. And the guy said, oh, yeah, I got this in Barcelona for my 60th birthday celebration.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, I don't even care if it's not true. I I now own it. It's mine. So that's it. It's lots of random, odd, weird things that I now am the owner of. I'm not allowed to buy another thing ever because now I have a hand. Yeah, and then it's been a lot of restaurants and stuff like that. So happy birthday celebration
like
to me.
Yeah.
It hasn't hurt. And I will say this, shout out to my friend Terry for letting me invade his home for more than 2 weeks because we have been together every day, nearly every minute of every day. And he's incredibly patient. And that tells you that I probably have, well, I've been a good guest in picking up after myself. But also we're close. And so close in that way that like we're friends, but we're like friends, brothers may as well be related.
Yeah.
And sometimes we have those discussions where we both have to be right about the same thing. And so any one of our discussions, it doesn't matter who's saying what, here's every discussion that we ever have, right? I wonder how many angels can dance on the head of a pin. 17. That's the answer. The answer 17. No, it's 10 plus 7. You have to say it biblically because this is a Bible question. And why are you even having an argument about this? Why is this a debate? But it's just what we do. So anyway, he's been great. And it would be a lot to have anybody come and live in your home for 15, 18 days. And so I was handed my eviction papers this morning. No, I knew that I had to leave.
But you are leaving today. So are you going to stay in Tucson on the way or somewhere? Where are you going to drive straight through?
We were staying in some weird place right outside of... James said, oh, go to Las Cruces, stay in Las Cruces. Don't go to El Paso. El Paso is the midway point. It's about 10 hours from here and then 10 hours from El Paso into Austin. And so, okay, sure. And so, no, it's not in any place. I booked a hotel that's really an Airbnb.
Okay.
Expedia is now selling Vrbo houses on their on their website. Site? That's what it's called.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, this will be fun. It's for one night. If it's not a great neighborhood, it doesn't matter. It'll all be fine. It'll all be perfectly fine. I just don't know how to get in. I don't have the code. And so it's like, and we're not, you know, I've got 12 hours. We'll forget the code. It'll all be fine. So no, we're staying at Airbnb in some place called Sunland.
Okay, don't know where that is.
It's like 5 minutes from El Paso. So great. And yeah, and it's for me, it's a little nicer than going to a hotel because there's a backyard and it's fenced and I can let Henry out.
Yeah,
and so it'll be, and should Henry bark, I don't have to worry about the 100 people on top of me or around me. Yeah, so again, I keep saying it'll all be fine because I know it won't be. It'll all be fine.
Yeah.
And so that's my bacon, long bacon. What's up with you?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing. I'm just working and got nothing new going on. So it's not even raining. So I can't complain about that. Everything is fine. All is good. Let's talk about our story.
Let's talk about things that aren't good.
Yeah. Talk about things that are horrible and bad. So did you see the Investigation Discovery docuseries Quiet on Set? Did you watch it?
I did. So I sat down. I thought it was like a documentary. There was going to be a film. And so when I saw there were four episodes, I was like, oh, man. Oh, God. I was going to. And then I saw it was ID, the Investigation Discovery Channel.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, man, everything they do, it's like, then the murderer will speak to us. Here's the murderer on camera, right? Everything's ominous. Everything has these undertones and overtones of just like drama.
Wow.
And so, however, it wasn't bad.
Good.
And I got a lot off of it.
It's good.
Yeah.
So you can speak to it during the show today.
Which is why I watched it, because I have zero interest in traumatized Hollywood children.
Right.
Yeah. Sadly, I could tell anybody at any point in time, don't let your kids go into entertainment.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, it's only going to end bad.
People know that by now. But anyway, so Quiet on Set was released earlier this week. And the whole point of the documentary is to say that there was an abusive environment at Nickelodeon, which was fostered by the adults, including Brian Peck, who served jail time for his sexual abuse of teen star Drake Bell. And I don't know any of these people. I've never heard of any of these people. I don't know anything about any of them. I was too old to watch all this bullshit when it was out. So I have no idea who any of these people are. just FYI. But according to the documentary, one of the biggest offenders was Dan Schneider. Child stars and adult co-workers told stories of racism, sexism, harassment, and verbal abuse at his hands. Who is Dan Schneider? Dan Schneider is a TV producer, screenwriter, and actor who was once Nickelodeon's golden boy behind some of the most successful live-action shows in the network's history, including shows that I've never heard of, The Amanda Show, Drake and Josh, Zoe 101, Sam and Cat, and iCarly. I have heard of iCarly, but that's all. I don't know anything about it. Have you seen any of them?
I've seen iCarly. I have a niece who loved iCarly. And there were moments when I would actually watch iCarly, right? I would watch it with her because that was what we were doing, but then I would get into the show upon occasion. Yeah. And so most of our listeners who are American will be very familiar with iCarly. And for those who aren't American or aren't familiar with the show, iCarly basically was a group of kids who all seemed to live in a New York penthouse loft style apartment.
Really?
Huh. And was there ever a parent around? No, but that was the point of Nickelodeon. Nickelodeon was television for children. And
by
so
children, supposedly
parents just, yeah, really? Right. Yeah. It was like four children, and then the kids were writing the shows themselves. And of course, no, they weren't. But that's how it was presented. And it was very much Hollywood for kids.
Yeah.
Yeah. So iCarly was an interesting show, kind of a Friends ripoff without being quite as strong. But it was also at the very dawn of the internet. And so what the show did and why it became so popular was they incorporated the internet into the concept of the show. So the idea was, these two young girls have a webcam show.
Oh.
Right? Yeah. And they spend their time talking and laughing with each other a lot. And that's kind of that for the webcam show. And then the show itself is what happened off of the webcam.
Off set.
But the actual webcam footage would be released online. So you could actually experience iCarly on two different screens, just like real life today, right? But it was revolutionary then. And kids were captured by it.
All right, cool. Well, Dan, who was behind iCarly, was an actor early in his career. That's how he started out, as a child actor. And then he wrote and produced for Nickelodeon from the 90s through 2018. He separated from Nickelodeon in 2018 after an investigation by the parent company of Nickelodeon, Viacom CBS, found that many people he worked with viewed him as verbally abusive. In Quiet on the Set, he was accused of engaging in unprofessional and inappropriate behavior in the workplace, one of the most common of which included frequently asking female employees to massage his neck while on set. The Amanda Show writers Jenny Kilgan and Chrissy Stratton accused Schneider of blatant displays of discriminatory behavior, saying he made them share a salary as the only two women in the writing room and often made inappropriate comments and demands of them. They eventually sued the network for gender-based discrimination. Stratton says in the documentary, working for Dan was like being in an abusive relationship. He would make comments like, women can't write funny, and would challenge Kilgan and Stratton to name a funny female writer.
Karen Kilgariff.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I guess this was before. Was this before Tina Fey? I mean, you'd think she would come up, but I don't know when this all happened, so. Kilgan says Schneider would play pornography on his computer and ask her if she would massage him as he watched, while in the writer's room or in the studio. He'd say things like, could you please give me a massage? I'll put one of your sketches in the show. Kilgan says he'd always present it like a joke, but you always felt like disagreeing with Dan or standing up for yourself could result in you getting fired. Kilgan also reports that Schneider said to Stratton in a meeting, and this is the most egregious thing I've heard of, you know what would be funny if you leaned over the table and acted like you were being sodomized while you told that story. This is in a meeting. Kilgan says that Stratton said no at first, but Schneider pushed it until she finally gave in. She couldn't get out of it, Kilgan says. She just leaned over the table and did what he asked her to do. It was probably the wrongest thing I'd ever seen happen to a woman in a professional environment. It was upsetting to watch. Kilgan quit after that and sued Nickelodeon and Schneider for gender discrimination. She settled for an undisclosed amount, which she says effectively ended her career in TV writing. It sucks. Stratton alleges in the docuseries that she was fired from the show for using her off hours to handle personal business, which is hilarious. When else are you going to handle personal business? But according to Kilgan, the writers were expected to be on call for Schneider 24/7. So you're supposed to be all about the show and Schneider and not handle any of your personal business at any time.
Which is true throughout Hollywood, right?
Yeah.
And so the movie, The Devil Wears Prada, which talks about like the life of a personal assistant to a wealthy, powerful person fashion's not the entertainment industry. Yes, it is. Yeah, you sign a deal with the devil and you just give your life away. And that's how...
Isn't there a difference between a personal assistant and a writer for a show, though? Would you expect the writers to be on call for...
Anybody involved really? In Hollywood. And as a matter of fact, the more your demand... the more your availability is demanded slash needed, the more important you are.
That sounds horrible.
Right. So if they don't need to call you on a Sunday, they don't need to employ
you're
you.
Not important. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So besides doing that kind of bullshit, Schneider was also accused of stereotyping black roles on his shows, including casting the only black male on one show to play a character who behaved like a drug dealer. He also allegedly used too adult humor in the kids' shows. Other adults working on the shows said that Schneider admitted that he found incorporating innuendo into his children's programming to be funny, such as skits involving a heavy focus on feet, Leon Frierson being made to wear a costume adorned with large noses that resembled penises, and a character played by Amanda Bynes on the Amanda show named Penelope Taint. Schneider is alleged to have pushed for short skirts, bikinis, and age-inappropriate clothing. He has denied these claims, and his spokesperson said, "Remember, all stories, dialogue, costumes, and makeup were fully approved by network executives on two coasts. A standards and practices group read and ultimately approved every script, and programming executives reviewed and approved all episodes. In addition, every day on every set, there were always parents and caregivers and their friends watching filming and rehearsals. Had there been any scenes or outfits that were inappropriate in any way, they would have been flagged and blocked by this multi-layered scrutiny." And this is obviously false because I've seen some of those scenes that were inappropriate. And boy, they were inappropriate. And so I've been getting TikToks now about Quiet on Set. And uh-huh. It's like 90% of my TikToks that I'm getting are about Quiet on Set and Dan Schneider and a lot of people complaining about him and talking about the way he was abusive. And one of the people that talk about it say that this only means, it doesn't mean that that there was no inappropriate behavior or no inappropriate scenes. It only means that things were dirty all the way up.
Fair enough. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Wouldn't argue that. There were a couple of clips in the docuseries, and I was very surprised by just how overtly sexual.
Yeah.
One in particular clip of Ariana Grande rolling around in a bed by herself in a skimpy-ish outfit, right?
I didn't even see that.
She hangs her head over the edge of the bed and says, "I'm thirsty," and then takes a bottle of water and pours it on her neck, right?
Oh, wow.
Why? I don't know, because I don't know if about the Ariana Grande character. Was she just so dumb she didn't know where her mouth was? Or right? And I think that was part of the joke and whatever. I have thoughts around humor and kids. They shouldn't mix. So, yeah, it was very sexual.
Well, yeah.
Could have easily been a webcam girl.
Yeah, totally. So Schneider has not been accused of any form of physical abuse, sexual or otherwise, but he was accused of verbal and emotional abuse in the form of screaming, yelling, threats, insults, and other toxic behaviors. So that's what I've got on Schneider and Quiet on Set. I do have a little bit about I do have quite a bit about the apology, but I wanted to turn it over to you and see if you had anything else you wanted to add.
Yeah, sure. Not too much. Let's do this. I've got a quick, and thank you, ChatGPT, for this, a quick history on Nickelodeon. Nickelodeon, the first cable channel dedicated to children's programming, has its roots deeply embedded in the 1970s, a time of innovation and expansion in cable television. Its origin story begins with the creation of an experimental cable service called Cube, Q-U-B-E, by Warner Cable in Columbus, Ohio in 1977. Cube was interactive cable television which feels kind of revolutionary for the time. Yeah. That offered specialized channels, including Pinwheel, which was an educational show for preschoolers and served as Nickelodeon's precursor. On December 1st, 1977, Pinwheel officially became its own channel, airing for 12 hours a day. However, it was not until April 1st, 1979, April Fool's Day, that the channel was relaunched and rebranded as Nickelodeon. The name inspired by the early 20th century Nickelodeons, which were small theaters that charged 5 cents for admission, aimed to evoke a sense of nostalgia and fun, positioning the channel as a place where kids can enjoy their own entertainment. Initially, Nickelodeon struggled to find its footing, lacking a clear direction and suffering from low viewership. Its early content heavily relied on educational programming, which was your big mistake, everybody. Sex sells. Mm-hmm. There, you know, that's why you have that's why you eventually have Ariana Grande rolling around on a bed. Let's see. Okay, so it relied heavily on educational programming, imported shows, and reruns of classic children's programming. The turning point came in the mid-1980s when Geraldine Laybourne took over the management of the network. Under her leadership, Nickelodeon underwent a major rebranding, introducing a new logo, the iconic orange splat, and a programming philosophy centered around respecting kids' intelligence and catering to their tastes and interests. This rebranding heralded the introduction of original programming and game shows like You Can't Do That on Television and Double Dare, which became instant hits and defined the network's identity. The success of these shows led to the creation of other shows, you know, including Doug, Rugrats, and the Ren and Stimpy Show, marking the beginning of Nickelodeon's golden era of animation.
The Ren and Stimpy Show was on Nickelodeon? I didn't realize that. I didn't think that was a show for kids. Did you ever see it?
I have not seen it. I'm familiar with the names, but I have not seen it.
I've seen it, but I didn't think that was a kids show. That's interesting.
It may have moved from Nickelodeon over to another channel and maybe, or whatever, maybe they sold the rights and then somebody started making it more adult. I got nothing on that. But so Dan's, it's not that it's a big gray area, but it's a big gray area, right? It's like there were a couple of jokes that were, clips were shown in the docuseries, and it would have young girls getting stuff splashed into their face or squirted onto their face, right? And the joke being that somebody else is trying to open like a ketchup package and I can't get it open. And oh, it splattered all over your face. All right. And yeah, that can definitely be sexual. But kids find all kinds of gross things funny, mm-hmm. right? And so do I buy the argument that, oh, I wasn't doing things sexually on purpose? No, I don't buy that at all, right?
No.
Children's cartoons, very famous for that. Bugs Bunny, very famous for that.
Right.
The Flintstones, very famous for that. They would write these jokes in to speak to the adult audience, also knowing that they would go over the kid's head, but keep the adults engaged, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we see you, mom and dad. We see you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. The other things that I have in regards to the predators who worked on the shows, so a little bit of lazy writing here. One of them was named Jason Handy.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah. You know? And then, of course, you mentioned Richard Peck. Oh, I lied. Brian Peck, whose middle name is Richard. So he's Brian Richard Peck or Brian Dick Peck.
And so
not surprising that there is a pedophile involved in an industry where there are children. That's where they go. That's what they do. But I did like this one point that was made by one of the actresses who was a child at the time and an adult speaking as to her experiences. And she says, who is sexual innuendo for on a kid's show, right? Mm-hmm. And obviously, it's not for the kids.
Right.
And we might make an argument that, all right, well, it's for the adults who are forced to watch the stupid cartoon. Or if you have young girls rolling around on a bed, putting water bottles, you know, all over their neck, maybe it's for the people who are the adults who are there to watch the girl roll around on the bed. Mm-hmm. So, for all of that. And just tough. It's, you know, kids want to act and they want to have fun and they should be able to do that. But the industry in Hollywood, even to this day, even with the air quotes around cleanup, but the cleanup of Me Too or the new focus on accountability for behavior.
Right.
Well, we can put it that way, right?
Sure.
It's still not a nice place, everybody.
Yeah. It's not really a place for kids.
Not at all. Not for a hot second.
I wouldn't want my kid to work there. I have a kid.
Yeah. Drake Bell.
Yeah.
Who's the young man who has come forward to say that he was sexually assaulted by Brian Peck and that he sued Brian Peck, right? Well, I take that back. He didn't sue Brian Peck. His parents went to the police, right? Mm-hmm. And so Drake Bell had to testify, right? And when Drake walked into the courtroom, he said that Brian Peck's side of the room was filled with people.
Right.
And his
people
side of the room.
People that he worked with.
Yeah, people that he worked with, people in the industry. Yeah. And as a victim, how would that feel? It wouldn't feel great. It would be
terrible.
Horrifying, right? And all of these people were there to support Brian Peck as character witnesses, right?
Right.
And why? Because he's such a great guy? No, because he had access to power, yeah. right? And so their jobs and their livelihood, he could help them along the way, mm-hmm. right? So just terribly, terribly unfortunate. And the worst part about the Drake Bell story for me is that as a small kid, he got involved in like 3 years old, right? He got involved with commercial stuff like that. And his parents were going through a divorce. And his dad decided, well, this is what my son wants to do. I'm going to work with my son. I'm going to help my son. So his kid would go to school. And then his dad would spend the rest of the afternoon and evening up until 11 p.m. taking his son to auditions and workshops and theater training, et cetera, because that's what his son wanted to do. And that's how they could spend their time together through this horrible experience of getting divorced, right?
Right.
And so then Drake got a job on Nickelodeon as like a supporting character. And then after a while, a spinoff show was under discussion and Drake was tagged as you as the star of the show. And so it's like all of his dreams are coming true. And his dad was with him every step of the way. His dad said, I would sit on the set and I would just watch as they filmed. I never took my eyes off my son, right? Other parents might go into the green room, and I'm not criticizing them, but I made sure that I was involved. And this guy, Brian Peck, just rubbed me the wrong way, no puns intended there, and he showed a lot of interest in my son. And at first, it was fine because he worked with children as an acting coach and as an addiction coach, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually started to not feel okay. And so the father, whose name I don't know, we'll just call Mr. Bell, went to somebody at Nickelodeon and said, hey, this guy, Brian Peck, unhealthy interest in kids. And, you know, I don't want him around my son anymore. And they said, oh, gosh, no, you're homophobic. You need to like work on yourself, right?
Right.
And so Mr. Bell was like, I'm not homophobic. I just know how adults should behave around children. And that's not what I'm seeing here. Anyway, so according to Mr. Bell, Brian Peck then got involved by talking to Drake's mother and telling her, your husband's really interfering with your son's career. Your husband's really making things difficult on the set. Your husband will never leave the set. Blah, 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 right? So then the mom says, hey, I want Drake to come live with me, and I'll take over managing him. He doesn't want you to be the manager anymore. And the father stepped aside and said, okay, fine. But whatever you do, do not allow Drake to be alone with Brian Peck. And unfortunately, that's exactly what happened. She was a single working mother, and it's that classic situation of a predator creating the environment so that they can prey, right? So they can get their victim alone.
Yeah.
And so the mom had a job, couldn't take her son up on auditions up to LA, lived in Orange County. It's an hour drive. So Brian's available to do that and does it. And that's how these situations happened. All terribly unfortunate. And so the worst part about all of this is that Brian Peck, after he was convicted and spent time in jail, got a job on the Disney Channel.
Yeah.
Why? How? Who knows? But I'll say it's, that's Hollywood.
Yeah, I think so. Yep. And other people who have been convicted of assault and abuse have got jobs in Hollywood, too. And I think they just are doing background checks, or if they are, they're I don't know what to say.
I know. It's obvious. If I had a bar and, and, you know, you've been convicted of stealing alcohol, I'm not hiring you to be the bartender.
Right. Exactly.
You don't even get to work in my bar. That's where the alcohol is.
Go work where there isn't alcohol.
Yeah. Exactly. Right. Go work where there isn't alcohol. Is there a job like that? And so yeah. So, but let's also be clear here that Dan is not being accused of inappropriate behavior with children. He is being accused of being abusive, being a giant asshole, right? And
well, he was kind of being accused of inappropriate behavior with children, but he's not accused of physical assault or sexual assault.
Yeah, yeah. So he sexualized children on camera because he saw that's where the ratings were, right? So he
plus the massages. I mean, he was
he was definitely inappropriate with adults.
Those were kids that were given in the massages.
Oh no, it was like one woman in costuming, kind of air quotes around famously because it's just a week now, but one of her, she was the head of the costuming department, and he would ask different costumers. So there may have been children that gave him massages, but the complaint that I heard in the docuseries was adult workers were being pulled, female workers always being female. Pulled and, you know, air quotes around asked to give me a massage, give me a massage. Yeah.
By your boss.
Yeah.
Or someone above you in the hierarchy.
By your fucking boss. My bosses, no, this is where I'm stumbling right now. I cannot ever imagine a boss asking me to do that or me asking anybody to give me a massage.
Or even anybody that worked with you.
Or do me a fucking favor that did involve your job. I mean, show up on time. Do me a favor. Show up on time. But go get my dry cleaning? No, that died in the 1960s.
Yeah.
Supposedly.
Hopefully. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the apology, which was a 19-minute video response on YouTube, which he did with this dude named Boogie, who was a former employee. And it was on Dan Schneider's YouTube channel, put out on Tuesday after the release of Quiet on Set. And Dan started by saying, "Watching over the past two nights has been very difficult, me facing my past behaviors, some of which are embarrassing, that I regret, and I definitely owe some people a pretty strong apology." Boogie asked him about how the writers were treated on the show, and Schneider said, "No writer should ever feel uncomfortable in any writer's room ever, period, the end, no excuses," he said, while at the same time characterizing his behavior as practical jokes. "A lot of the times there are inappropriate jokes made and inappropriate topics come up, but the fact that I participated in that, especially when I was leading the team, it embarrasses me, and I shouldn't have done it. I said things that went too far. I was an inexperienced producer. I was immature. It wouldn't happen today, but I'm just really sorry it happened. I can tell you why it hurts really bad for me," he continued. "I was green. I was scared. I was excited. It meant the world to me that I was getting these opportunities. And I went in and I got lucky because my first couple experiences were fantastic. And the fact that I didn't pay it forward to every employee that walked through my door, it hurts my heart because I should have. And I wish I could go back and fix that." And later he said, "I hate that anybody who worked for me didn't have a good time." He also went on to say that he let the pressure of producing for the network get to him. "I would snap at people sometimes. I would be snarky when I could have given them a nicer answer. All these jokes that you're speaking of that the show covered over the past two nights, every one of those jokes was written for a kid audience because kids thought they were funny and only funny," he insisted. He emphasized in the video that he wasn't the only person in charge of what made it to the air. "My bosses and their bosses' bosses, they're approving this," he said. "There were many, many levels of scrutiny," he added, indicating Nickelodeon executives. "If anybody had said anything, it would have been cut out. We have some adults looking back at them 20 years later from their lens, and they're looking at them and they're saying, 'I don't think that's appropriate for a kid's show.' I have no problem with that. Let's cut those jokes out of the show, just like I would have done 20 years ago or 25 years ago. If there's anything in a show that needs to be cut because it's upsetting somebody, let's cut it." And that makes me mad personally, me as Juliet, because he's saying that the problem is that the jokes upset people, not that they were damaging to people, not that they damaged the people that were on the show and people that were there watching the show and people that potentially were watching the show on television. And he actually called out the Disney Channel for hiring Brian Peck to work on the kids' show after he was released from prison as a registered sex offender. "I don't understand that," he said. And about the massages, he said it was wrong. It was wrong that I ever put anybody in that position. It was the wrong thing to do. I'd never do it today, and I'm embarrassed that I did it then. As far as the two women sharing salaries, Schneider said he never controlled the amount of money someone made and never knew what most of the writers he worked for made, which I think is bullshit. He says it is a common practice in Hollywood to split two writers for the price of one when the two writers are on their first job, and that he has been on multiple sets that did that. I have no idea if whether that's true or not, but it sounds crazy. How can you split? How can you have two people working for one person's salary? And I don't think those writers make that much money. Do they make that much money that you can afford to split the salary?
Writers don't make that much. Most writers don't make that much money. Some writers do. It just depends on the success of the show.
Ones. Right. Yeah.
And so, you know, yeah. I have not heard that, but I've known people who have written in Hollywood. And you think like, oh, wow, you're a writer in Hollywood. Yeah, you're a writer in Hollywood, but the next day you're back at Starbucks.
Really?
Yeah, Oh, yeah. Oh. It's an industry that eats people's hopes and dreams so that we may all laugh. Oh,
that's
right? That give us pleasure. And so, yeah, am I surprised that that's the setup? No, not at all.
I was shocked.
Am I surprised that people would do that? Not at all. Right. Because
to get a job,
you have the option to say no. You can say, no, I don't want to split my salary. I'm not going to take that job. Thank you for the opportunity. Then you don't work. Exactly. Yeah. Or you don't work in that job, but it's not, you don't work forever. Right.
Right.
And so, you know, for sure, is it a shitty thing to do? It's taking advantage of people. It's shitty.
Yeah,
it's
absolutely.
Hollywood. That's all the industry does. Hi, Hollywood. I am available to work for you any day of the week, but you do take advantage of people and you know it. Naughty vixen. So, yeah.
It's the worst.
So that sucks. And not great. Does he control it? No, but could he fight for it to make it better? Yeah, he could. He could have gone to somebody and said, hey, pay these two people equally.
Yeah. I believe it. I believe he had some power there and some
input. He had opportunity for input.
Yeah, absolutely. So he said about watching Quiet on set, there were so many times I wanted to pick up the phone and call some of these people to say, I'm so sorry, and let's talk about it, and I wish you'd had a better time, and I wish I could have shown you a better experience. To which I say, why didn't you pick up the phone and call these people? Because he apparently didn't, according to the people that on TikTok and elsewhere that I've seen talk about his apology. And at the end of his apology interview, he said there are two things that he would do differently. The first is that he would have a licensed therapist present to make sure the kids really wanted to be there doing that job. And the second the second thing he would change is how he treated everyone. The main thing that I would change is how I treat people. I definitely at times didn't give people the best of me. I didn't show enough patience. I could be cocky and definitely overambitious and sometimes just straight up rude and obnoxious. And I'm so sorry that I ever was. So throughout this apology, so-called apology, he doesn't ever acknowledge the multi-layered power imbalance at play. So he was a man working with women, with children, female children. He was the boss of all these people and he was older and he doesn't acknowledge any of that. So I'm not really happy about this apology and I can go through the criteria. Real quick, before I ask you for your feedback, was there an expression of regret? Kind of. Was there an explanation of what went wrong? Not really. He had justifications like the kids thought it was funny, or I was green, or other people were overseeing it. Was there an acknowledgement of responsibility? He says he takes responsibility for some of it, but he pushes blame onto other people, saying things like, the notion that I had the power to just produce wherever I want, whatever I want, and have it air is false. There were many, many levels of scrutiny. Declaration of repentance. He says, I owe some people a pretty strong apology, but there was no real apology. And he didn't reach out to anyone individually and apologize. There's no offer of repair and there's no request for forgiveness. And Alexa Nicholas, who was an actor from Schneider's show Zoe 101, says it best. She says, where's a phone call or an apology? How come you can do all of this? How can everyone do all of this but not reach out to the person they hurt? When someone doesn't personally come to you and apologize, it's not an apology. If you hear about it through other people, it's not really an apology. An apology is to the person that you hurt. That's what an apology is for. So I think this failed apology is self-serving, and I give it a -6.
Oh, wow. Okay, great. So,
let's hear from you.
I watched the whole series, right?
Wow.
And there was an interesting, I don't know what to call it. It was framed in a really interesting way. So it's four episodes, and the first three episodes, I felt like the story was wrapped up. At the end of the third one, I was like, well, that's it. That's done. Dan Schneider, this was the culture of Nickelodeon on his shows. These are the actors that work for him and their experiences. Mm-hmm. This is what happened. Drake does talk about the predation. So, okay, great. And then there was episode 4. And I was like, okay, this is just extra. I don't understand what it's about. And the first 3 episodes do paint Dan as a bad person. He is a bad person, right? But didn't touch kids. They're clear to say, like, he's not a pedophile. Right. He's not the pedophile, right? And so, fine. And so, episode 4 was the story of Drake, and they go into great detail, right? And it's him talking directly to one of the producers and his dad, and it's very moving, right? And he had a really difficult life, as most child actors do.
Yeah.
Most child actors grow up to abuse alcohol or drugs or become overtly sexualized, right? Or sexual, right? In eventually inappropriate ways. And so for all of that. Mm-hmm. And Drake says the one person that reached out to him during that time to ask him if he was okay was Dan Schneider.
Wow.
And that Dan Schneider called his mom, and Dan Schneider helped his mom write her victim impact statement that was read out to the court, and that Dan has been there for him consistently as a emotional support, right? And so it was interesting that the first 3 episodes, Dan is this horrible person, right? Mm-hmm. Just awful. But in the last one, he's the only one who's good, right?
Yeah.
Or at least not the only one, but one of the few who are good, at least in Drake's story. And so I thought that was like a really interesting way. The Drake episode is really a standalone piece. You could watch that and get everything you need to know about the Drake story, and maybe not so much about Nickelodeon and Dan being an asshole on the set. Just interesting choice.
It's just how complicated people can be, I guess.
But yeah, and I'll say episode 4 ended, and I was like, wait a minute, is there a part 5 coming? So I'm not sure that the series is done, because it ends with Drake saying something like, and I'll tell you one more thing, and then the camera goes black, right?
Wow.
It's not quite that literally, but it definitely felt that way. And so, okay, cool. I've watched the series, and then I watched The Apology, which was 20 minutes long. And I said, you know what? I'm going to give this, I've got all kinds of feelings about you, Dan, apologizing on camera to someone who worked for you.
Yeah, totally.
Who still is in the industry. And you could still, even though you're not actively working at Nickelodeon, you still have some opportunities open to you where maybe you're going to make a show and maybe you can hire them. Hollywood, and relationships in Hollywood are built, on a house of maybes. Uh-huh. Maybe this, maybe that, maybe this. And sometimes all those maybes turn out to actually happen and you have a solid house, right? And most of the time they don't. And so things crumble underneath you. So that made me feel a little queeby. It was like, oh, God, you could have just like found a real reporter or spoke to the camera yourself directly. But okay, whatever. Great. I gave it a 6 because I thought a positive 6, right? Well, here's why I need to learn how to do my job better. So in that moment, I gave it a 6. And then I saw on YouTube that Alexa Nichols had commentary to The Apology. And so I started watching hers, right? And I'm at a 2 now, right? and here's why. He made an apology, and I do believe that he's remorseful, right? However, I think also he's not taking full accountability, and I think it's very self-serving. Yeah. And so I'm going to give it a 2 and leave it at that.
Okay. So I think that averages out to
-4? No.
Something. Yeah.
Negative 4 divided by -3? 2.
I don't know. I can't do math. It's
a negative number and not good. And I thought Alexa Nicholas actually made a really striking point. And so that striking point was that predators evolve. And so culturally, predators are learning, oh, I can't behave this way anymore so overtly. Right. So I need to soften things up and I need to la, 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 right? Mm-hmm. And so she points out that by working with Bogey, Dan is displaying that he's still a predator, right?
Yeah.
And that's her word. I can't think of a different word. It's sociopath, psychopath, narcissist, whatever you want to say, right? The core underlying badness is still there, coming out in different ways.
I see. That makes sense.
Yeah, it made great sense. I actually really liked her take during the show. I liked her take, but I also liked her breakdown of his apology.
Very cool. All right, so minus something, we give it.
Yeah, it's a negative number.
And we don't like Dan Snyder.
No, and I did like iCarly, though, so.
So do you have a Who's Sorry Now or an Apology Expected today? Because I do not.
I have an Apology Expected, and it's a name I don't like saying often.
Okay.
Or a name I don't like saying, and a name that I don't say often, Candace Owens. Yeah, I know. Talk about unfortunate. And she's a child actor, a teenage actor. So maybe she was an adult.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. She was in Clueless. Oh. And so she was a teen actor, but she could have been like 18, 19. So, and not a fan. Love Clueless. Sorry, let's be clear here.
Totally. Clueless. Fan of Clueless.
Total fan. Alicia Silverstone. Mwah. Chef's kiss. You're still amazing. Candace Owens. Oh, God. Why? Mm-hmm. Why have you done this? Why? So she's become a right-wing commentator, and at a speech, I think last week, certainly within the last 2 weeks, she said, hey, you know, if Hitler had just focused on Germany and improving things in Germany and making Germany great, everybody would have said, all right, fine. But he didn't. He went into other countries, and that was the problem.
What? Right?
Yeah, yeah. And I'm not sure exactly what she was referencing there, but it definitely smacks of anti-Semitism.
For sure. And
she was fired from the Daily Mail or the Daily Wire? Daily Wire. And that is really, I like...
It's egregious.
They are so right-wing.
Yeah.
So anti-Semitic. So all the things, right? Like, not whatever for that. They're basically a Nazi publication. And so.
And you're surprised that they fired her?
I'm surprised they fired her.
Wow.
Yeah. And I am sure that, and as far as I know, like, that's her only revenue stream. I mean, she may have some like YouTube channels or some other, you know, direct to the people channels, but.
Prone to all.
Yeah. So I wish she would go away, but I'm sure she's going to be coming out and saying, I'm sorry. That's not what I was saying, everybody. You didn't listen to me. Yeah, we did. You didn't listen to you, Candace.
Yeah.
And you haven't been listening to you for a really long time. Yeah. So internalized racism.
Apology expected.
Just awful. She's just an awful person. And oh, well, there you go. So apology expected. And that is that.
All right. So I think that's it for this week, unless you have some last words on Dan Schneider or child abuse or anything like that.
And then he didn't say anything about child abuse at all when he handed the microphone. He just said, no. Stop abusing kids, everybody. Just stop it.
Please. It's
don't put your kids in Hollywood.
Just don't.
Don't. No, they could be actors when they grow up. That's fine. Yeah. And we don't need child actors now because there's AI and they can just create fake kids. And whatever. Who cares? Or just make cartoons and use adults to voice
there
the cartoons.
You go. Cartoon
and
kids.
Let kids watch cartoons. That's great. That's fine. It worked for me.
Cartoons for kids.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. All right. So that's it. Thanks, everyone, for listening. As always, stay cool, cucumbers. Don't trip potato chips.
TTFN.
Talk to you later.
Bye.
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 for listening to Apologies Accepted, the podcast.
You can find links to the articles and the sources in the show notes.
To submit an apology or find out more, visit us at apologiesaccepted.net, where you can also find our merchandise.
We're on Twitter at Apologies Accepted.
And on Instagram at apologies.accepted.
You can support our important work at Patreon.com/Apologies Accepted.
And fuck Facebook.
Bye.
Bye.